Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello!
Hello!
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
We had a week off last week. I just want to say, because a few people have asked me on social media, I said this a while ago, but there's some stuff going on that we can't talk about on the podcast because it's not our story to tell. But there's some stuff going on, which means for personal reasons, every now and again, we're going to vanish for a week. And if that happens, that's the answer to the question.
Yeah.
But last week, fortunately, I was able to pretend it was because it was your birthday and I was giving you the night off.
And it was my birthday.
It was. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
For last week.
Thanks. My birthday wishes, everyone.
Yeah. So are you willing to discuss the number?
Yeah, I'd love to discuss the number. 49.
49. And
what a non-birthday. Like, well, who cares about the 49?
You say that. So here's what I think. I found 49 to be quite a depressing birthday. And I don't think I'd ever had a depressing birthday before now.
So I didn't.
Like the idea of 40 looming didn't really bother me. And like I think, you know, when people are like, oh, I'm going to be 30, I'm like, yeah, you should be so lucky. Yeah, 30s are great.
Yeah.
And then actually, yeah, 40s are great. And then realizing that 50 was looming, not that I think 50 is that old, but knowing that the next one's 60. And there's no getting away from the fact that some people retire at 60.
Let's not think about that.
No, like as much as you can see somebody like the late Iris Apfel or something, you can't dodge what 60 is, right?
But seeing as I'll probably never be able to retire.
Yes.
it's another vein of depression going on there.
so 49 then felt a bit depressing to me because it's like, oh God, 50's the next one. And nothing wrong with 50, but... Next significant one after that, you are into, you're getting towards being a pensioner, is how I thought about it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I hope she's all right. But you were fine.
I was fine, yeah.
And then I thought, oh, it's because you're a woman, so probably because of the way society is, you've had to deal with all that at like 35 or something.
Yeah, I mean, 40 was bad. I've said this before, I've got this thing that like one day, quite soon I'll be 60 and God I'll wish I was 50 again and 49. Oh, to be 49, I'll be saying one day.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to get depressed about it.
That's a good attitude. Something worrying. Well, was it worrying? It was upsetting, I think it's probably the phrase. On Friday, I went to pick a pair of trousers from the dry cleaners. Mm-hmm. I wasn't having them dry cleaned. I was having them altered.
Oh, they do that at the dry cleaners, okay.
I have very short legs.
Oh, really?
I never told you this.
Well, surely I can see with my own eyes over the last 20 years that you've got very short. You just seem to have normal legs.
Let me tell you something. I almost got into an argument with my wife about this yesterday.
Okay.
Because it is a fact that I can't buy trousers, even short-legged trousers, without the need to get them altered.
Well, how are you hiding this?
Right.
Do you wear little stilts?
And she's going, no, your legs aren't that short.
Oh.
I'm saying, I'm not interested whether you think my legs are short. They are just empirically short.
But there must be some optical illusion here. I'm not denying the fact. I'm willing to admit now, because there's evidence.
Yes.
I will admit that you've got short legs. But what is this optical illusion going on that you don't look like you've got short
legs?
Well,
I don't know, because I've thought about this a lot, given that it's me.
Right.
And I look at myself and I don't think I've got an especially elongated body. It's not like I've got a long torso.
Right.
That seems of a normal length. Mm. And then I don't have a swan-like neck.
No.
And then my head is a bit on the big side, but it's not long. Like, I wouldn't be going on a holiday to the Easter Island and the islanders would be saying, no, you've got to get a statue of that while you're here.
No.
It's not Lionel Richie-ish.
No, no.
So I don't quite understand which bit of me is out of proportion so that my legs can be unusually short,
yeah,
but for me to have the illusion of me being a somewhat normally proportioned man.
What's compensating?
I don't know.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Maybe we should get you professionally measured.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and find out what's off. Mm. Yeah.
What's off?
I don't know. It was these trousers that I'm wearing now, actually.
So every pair of trousers, you had to have them shortened?
So I either get them shortened, I make a little turn up,
right?
Or they're ruined within a few weeks because they're going underneath my shoes.
Okay,
So I've come with a slightly baggier leg on these. I thought, my age, really?
Mm-hmm. It's the fashion. Don't worry.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the fashion. Yeah, yeah.
Baggy trousers.
Yeah, it's the fashion.
That's good to know. Mm. It's an accident. I'd taken these things in, and I was going to pick them up, and I had my son with me, and we go in, and the fella at the dry cleaners, he's new, I don't know him, but he's chatty and it's nice.
Okay.
Until he gestures towards my son and says, and is this your grandson?
Oh god. What surprises you most here? Okay, first of all, you don't look like you could be a granddad to your son.
Well, I think
even if you were close, he was taking a risk there unless he felt 100% sure. Like, why was he not hedging his bets? Going, oh, so who's this to you then? Or like, no, what you do is you always go down one. You always say,
is this your brother?
Is this your brother? Yes. You go, is this your dad? You always go down at least one, if not two or three. You don't risk going in like right at the top there with granddad.
Yeah, it's baffling that he did it. And, you know,
How did you react? Did you say no?
And then he got embarrassed.
Oh.
And then I was, don't worry. I think it's funny. And my son was finding it really funny that I'd been mistaken for a granddad. And that was all fine. Then we left the dry cleaners. And something had happened whereby he charged me the wrong amount and he needed to chase me up the street.
Oh, God.
So he chases me up the street and says, oh, sorry, I charged you the wrong amount. Will you come back and pay an extra £4 or whatever it was? So, sure. So I go back in and and he says, sorry about the mix-up.
Hmm.
And it doesn't occur to me he's talking about the £4. I just assume he's talking about the granddad thing.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, because that's what he needs to be sorry about.
Oh, it's fine. It's funny. It's probably because I got grey hair. And then he looks confused because he's talking about the £4.
Oh, God. If I'd have accidentally called someone a granddad when they weren't, I'd be letting them off that £4. I'd be putting that £4 myself into the till. Don't you think that's a tax?
Yes.
That should be his bad manners tax.
Yes, that's exactly what it should be. Mm. I have a friend. I'm going to write his name down for you.
Oh, thanks. Okay.
Who has a local dry cleaner that he's been in with his wife on a number of times. Mm. Well, somewhat recently, he was in there without her. And they said, oh, where's your mum today?
No.
His wife is younger than he is.
No.
Yeah.
Mom.
That's not good, is it?
No.
I wonder if it's a dry cleaner thing.
Well, it seems that way. I'm never getting the dry cleaners at all.
Like, what are those chemicals?
Oh.
Oh, yeah. They'd think that, what do they think Tom was? Like your foster child?
Grandchild.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
How are we doing for time here? Should we move on? I'll tell you something else.
It's up to you.
I'll tell you something else.
Okay, go on then.
Might be one of those podcasts which rambles on a bit, for which I apologise in advance. So I received an email this week from one of the, I'd say, like, former middle managers at the radio station we used to work at, who's risen through the ranks.
Okay.
And they are moving out of their headquarters, the studios that we used to work in, where they've been forever, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was set up as Virgin Radio in the early 90s and then became Absolute Radio. And it's this building called Number One Golden Square in London. And it's like very nicely located in Soho. And even when bands or celebrities would come in to be interviewed, they always thought it was an especially nice place to have a studio compared to some of the places you go to.
It was brilliant, yeah.
Towards the end of our time there, they got bought by a big like conglomerate that they sort of had to use that building as like a battery farm for radio stations, and there just was never quite enough room. Mm. So I think they're moving out. Mm-hmm. Well, I know they're moving out actually. Yep. And the reason he was emailing me was they want to do a special program, or they're going to do a special program with all the live music that was, not all of it, because it'd go on for months, but like it'll be an hour, and it'll be just, I'm presuming, like the very, very famous ones. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like I don't think they'll be including our session in the disabled toilet with the 26-piece Swedish band I'm from Barcelona.
Oh, they should.
For example.
That was a highlight.
But they probably will include Adele in session.
Fine.
I'm imagining. Mm. Anyway, so he's getting in touch with me because they're doing this hour-long programme where they're featuring live music recorded in that building over the years. And he's asked if I will share a memory and talk into a song. Mm-hmm. And he gave me a choice of a few different songs that I might be interested in reminiscing about, and I picked one. And it just got me thinking back to those days, because there was a point when we were doing like the afternoon drive timey home timey show where we had live music on that show most nights, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. And I say that because, you know, when you're trying to fill most nights, sometimes you got to make do.
Yeah.
But it's nice. I always thought it's nice to hear somebody playing live on the radio then as it's happening. What I never particularly like is when something's been recorded earlier that day.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh, can't you just play the record for me?
When I hear
the song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I always loved it when people would come in and play and it'd feel live and exciting and like that. And the more, I guess, the bigger the acts, or the more technically demanding they would tend to play in an area down the corridor from the studio, which was known since the Virgin Radio days as the zoo, but we used to refer to it as the staff canteen, because I've got two separate memories and I don't know which one is real. Okay, so in one of the memories, it's because zoo sounds Life from the Zoo sounds like a terrible like 90s cable TV music show.
Yes, yes.
And it just sounded, it just felt too cheesy to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I've also got half a memory of a producer having a bee in his bonnet about like listeners not just automatically understanding what the zoo is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're expecting to hear like howler monkeys or parrots or things.
It's very misleading.
Yeah, and I think both of those are valid reasons. But yeah. But then we would somewhat belligerently, I think, always refer to it as the staff canteen.
Which is misleading in its own way, because like there was no canteen there. But some people used to eat their lunch there sometimes.
You can kind of imagine. It's easier to imagine something happening in a canteen than in a zoo.
It's where you used to go and make the tea and coffee and get your
biscuits. Yeah. We'd get free biscuits. Mm-hmm. Do you remember one time they put a padlock on the cupboard?
Yes.
When I started there, and this was when I was still drinking, they had a bar with Guinness on draft that you could help yourself to.
Oh, wow.
Different times.
Very different times.
Anyway, where was I going with this? So all this live music that would happen down there in the staff canteen. So I've just been like thinking about it. I've spent, because he'd asked me to do this, I spent a bit of time today trying to remember, because you do, when you work in a radio station, you get so used to stuff that it's very easy to forget what happened. Mm-mm-mm. So I was looking through some of my old email, trying to work out who we had play on the show. And I'd be looking at it and thinking, I don't remember Sinead O'Connor singing for us.
Oh, God.
But I think it happened.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
You know, so there's lots of things like that where these real legends would come in, but the memory has completely fallen out of my head. I remember... we used to do these Christmas party shows down there. So I remember like Narina Palo would often be in and Slow Club. And of course, Rebecca has now gone on to be Self-Esteem and she's incredibly famous, but she used to be in this like nice little indie duo who would always come on the show. I remember Eddie Izzard, Tim Minchin. Like, I remember David Harewood being there once because he'd come. In fact, he'd come with Eddie Izzard. They were promoting some show together, but because he wasn't famous at the time, I didn't really direct any questions towards him. You know, just the odd one. So I remember all that stuff. And then some other bits of things that popped into my head is there was one time when they were refurbishing it, and Paul Weller was in doing a session, and he notices that we're throwing away all these soundproof tiles and says, oh, can I have those for my home studio? Yeah, sure, so it's no problem. And he went and rented a van and came back with his dad later that day, and they were like loading these tiles into the back of a van.
I couldn't love that more.
I remember we had Pete Best, the original drummer from the Beatles, coming in. And I got this idea that we should hire a drum kit, set it up down there, and then when he comes on the show, we'll surprise him, say, Pete, we're going to give you the chance you've always wanted. Prove to us that anything Ringo can do, you can do better. Drum along with some Beatles songs. Took one look at the drums and said, absolutely not, no chance. Which I think that was quite classy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was looking at our Facebook page of the old radio show. Mm. And we had Elbow play a session, which I do remember. What I had no memory of is it was on Guy Garvey's 40th birthday. And we had a party for him. And we had like pineapple and cheese on sticks and fizzy Vimto and Twiglets. And I've got no memory that happened.
Me neither.
It's really sad, isn't it?
God.
These things that, you know, a lot of people would be able to look back at this halcyon days of their lives and think, God, remember when we did that? And I just don't remember any of it. I haven't even got the excuses because I was drinking, because it was well after I stopped drinking.
We should have kept a diary. That's what diaries are for.
Well, the only reason I know all this is because you kept logs. They're not very poetic and they're short on detail.
Very short, imagine. Yeah.
But the story I told on this thing that I sent to them, I don't know if they use it or not, but he'd asked me if I'd introduced one of the tracks he gave me the option of was Florence and the Machine. So this was around the time that Absolute Radio was first launching. And it was also around the time when she was this new artist and there was starting to be a bit of a buzz around her. And she'd come in to do a session and it just felt like right person, right time. And she came in, played a couple of songs that I interviewed her beforehand. And I just liked her. She's one of these people that I just instantly liked. And we had a fun chat. And at some point during the conversation, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? I brought it up because she didn't know what I was talking about. I brought up the Waltons.
Yeah.
I think maybe she'd mentioned Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
And I'd countered with the Waltons. Mm. She said, what's that? And then I had to do the hard sell on this like corny, sentimental 70s family drama set in the Depression in the Appalachian Mountains, right?
Yeah.
And I don't quite know how to move the interview on from this point. Mm. So I say, anyway, I'll send you the DVD.
Right.
And then we move on and she plays these songs and it's great. Mm. After the songs, she says, have you got a piece of pen and paper? You got a piece of paper and a pen? I say, sure. And she writes down the address for me to send this DVD that I promised her to.
Right.
And at the time, she was still living with her parents. That's how early in her career it was. So I go on Amazon and see like the complete Waltons collection. I think that'll do. It's like 50 quid or something. Mm. But you know, I was making decent coin.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a fun interview.
And maintaining good relationships.
Yeah. She's going places this one. So I order it. And then I don't think about it again until over the course of this, I would say the next 6 months, I get somewhat regular email from Amazon with subject lines like The Waltons season 4 has been dispatched. The Waltons season 2 has been dispatched. And clearly what I've ordered isn't a box set. It's just all the individual series. There are 9 separate seasons of The Waltons. Mm. And they're not in stock because I don't think it's a very in demand item. So you know, as it comes in stock, they dispatch it.
Mm.
So think about what that looked like.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like a lunatic, weird stalker bombarding a young female pop star's parents with DVDs of the Waltons over the course of half a year.
At weird intervals.
Yes, at weird intervals.
Oh, God. God, he sent me another one. 3 months. Oh, my God, I can't believe this, Mum. Dad, should we get an injunction? 2 months later, season 10.
Oh. What's the sitch with the email this week, Annabelle? You happy?
Very happy. So Chris has got in touch with us. Remember you talking about your toilet-based problem with the Diet Coke recently?
No.
What? That was like 2 weeks ago.
What was
so
I
you
saying?
You went into a pub, you needed to go to
oh,
the
yeah,
toilet.
Oh, yeah.
So you bought
Sorry.
A Diet Coke
I'll
and didn't
tell
it.
You why I didn't know what you meant. Mm. There are some weird smells with both of our toilets at the moment.
Right.
And I thought I'd been talking about that. When you said your toilet problem, I thought, but how is it related to Diet Coke?
Okay. So Chris writes, listening to the recent podcast and Jeff's toilet-based woes, I thought I would share my tip for using the toilet in pubs. I should start by saying I am blessed with bowels of steel and almost never have to go outside of my own house.
Wow.
I do, however, often have to pee whilst out and about. And if the only reasonable option is a pub, then this is what I do. Enter the pub. For the benefit of this exercise, we shall call it the King's Head. Have a good look around. Check all rooms, if more than one, as if looking for a friend, but also clocking toilet location. A quick nod to the person behind the bar, then off to the toilet. Come back out with phone to ear. Pro tip, turn off ringer in case someone calls. And recite this script. Where am I? I'm in the King's Head, just about to get a drink in. Where are you? Oh, you said the King's Head. Well, are you definitely stopping there then? All right, I'll be there in 5 minutes. Walk towards door, apologetic smile to bar person. You better have a pint waiting for me when I get there. Out through door to freedom. Oh, that's good.
It is. I wonder if you've got to have a certain amount of confidence in your own acting skills.
What did you think of mine?
Good.
Did you?
Yeah, that was a good line reading, I think.
So I can do it then. I'm confident in doing it.
Yes.
Now. So everyone practice. Yeah. Send us your tape and we'll assess whether you can do it confidently in public or not.
Oh, wouldn't you? That'd be like what it's like to be a casting director.
Yes.
You'd love send to do
me video,
that.
Send me videos because I need to see a facial expression. Send me a video of you doing it on the phone and I will email you back and I'll personally tell you whether it's good enough to use or not.
Oh, I would love that. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I'm not sure about my acting abilities, but I have done that thing. Usually it's, although I've not been one of these for years, like a McDonald's where I could go in, like look at the menu and try and have an expression on my face which says, oh, but what will I eat? I mean, the choice, it's so vast. Mm. Maybe I'll go and urinate and give it some thought.
Yeah. I need to empty my bladder so I can concentrate.
And then exit very, very swiftly.
Right.
But throwing a bit of acting into the trouble is a lot of these places, not pubs, but fast foodie places, that especially, I don't know if it's like this in smaller places, but in cities, I think especially, they've got those bloody door code things now.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, on the toilets.
Yeah.
So you have to ask for a code.
Which is on
it?
The back of the receipt sometimes.
Oh,
yeah. So, although I think there was a Twitter account devoted to circulating those codes.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
that's
me too.
Brilliant. Okay. Chris goes on. I have a second point to raise on the subject, a business proposal. I have an idea for a mobile phone game called Gotta Go. The basic premise is you are controlling a character, choose male or female, through a town when all of a sudden, gotta go. Your bowels have let you down. You need to find somewhere and quick. You proceed to waddle through the town, making turns, looking for a safe haven to unload. Various options present themselves, shops, cafes, pubs, public toilet, but each toilet has hidden dangers. Will the toilet be out of order? Will the gents or ladies be out of order, depending on which gender you're playing as, so you have to risk the other? Will there only be a disabled toilet free? Will you be challenged as the toilet's only for customers? Will they be out of toilet paper? Will all the cubicles be occupied? When you make your choice, either you get blessed relief in comfort and you're back out on the street, you have to abort and carry on your search. Some of the misfortune occurs to make the experience less satisfactory, but at least you have some relief. Back out on the street, you continue your journey until, gotta go, and the desperate waddle through the town resumes. You lose the game when you saw yourself in the street. As Jeff is one of the world's leading experts on finding and using toilets, I thought maybe he could come on board as toilet consultant.
Yes.
The different options available, the dangers associated with each. We could also have, as an additional feature, have the Annabelle port, where you get so desperate you take the option of nipping down a quiet-looking side street. Chris. If this goes viral, we'll be millionaires. The only real problem I say is that despite my job being a software developer, I hate writing code. And I don't actually know how to write code for games anyway. Thank you for reading, if indeed you did.
We can't be that far off just telling ChatGPT to do that for us, can we?
I'll do it later.
Yeah.
We'll be millionaires.
That sounds great.
Wonderful.
Chris.
Okay, let's move on then to Helen. I want to begin by stressing that I obviously have the normal requisite levels of self-loathing and I'm not at all someone who is comfortable being naked. But nevertheless, a few years ago, I was on holiday in Istanbul. My boyfriend and I decided to go to some Turkish baths. As we walked in, the staff let us know that the male and female baths were separate. So off we go into our respective changing rooms. When I got to the changing room, I realised that my boyfriend had my swimming costume. I rushed back out to reception to find him, but when I asked the person on reception and explained I didn't have my swimming costume, he said, "It's okay." I should have pressed that I would really like him to go and find my partner for my swimming costume, but obviously as a drifter, I skulked back to the changing room. I found myself sat in the changing room, unsure what to do. I had no swimming costume. Should I go in naked, fully clothed? My initial plan was to wait out the designated 2 hours allotted in the changing room, not making a sound and drawing no attention to myself. However, disaster struck. I had booked a massage and a masseur started banging on the door, shouting my name. I panicked. I honestly saw no real options when I was trapped in a tiny room with no clothes. My sudden plan was this. Strip off. No clothes, but tie up the teeny tiny thin towel around myself. I walked out like this, no clothes, tiny towel, to the lovely masseuse who'd led me into a big room full of maybe 30 women, all of whom were wearing swimsuits. She then started tugging at the towel, trying to get it off to no avail. Another masseur walked over to help. By this point, a whole room of people were staring at this strange situation. She ended up pulling the towel open with brute force and exposing my flabby, pale, naked body to the room. She made a little ooh sound as she clearly realised why I was trying desperately to hide. So for the next 2 hours, I wandered around being bathed in massage. She held my hand as she led me from room to room like some naughty child, totally naked. The worst thing is at the end of this experience, by which time I was significantly less relaxed than when I entered. She obviously expected a tip. I clearly had no money stashed on my naked body, so I couldn't even give her a tip for the 2 hours she had to spend leading around an ashamed naked woman.
That is nightmarish.
Isn't it?
Wasn't that a thing in Game of Thrones that shave somebody's head and make them walk through the streets?
Yes.
Naked while they all shouted shame.
That's what it's like.
That is actually like that, yeah. Please. Send us yours. hello@adriftpodcast.com. Annabelle.
Yes.
What's going on with that Substack of yours?
Oh, thanks for asking. So last week, my birthday week.
Yes.
I wrote about that feeling you have when a group of people sing happy birthday to you. Mm. Like you don't know what to do with your face, your hands, your body. It's so awkward. And in fact, one of the commenters made a really good point. She said, why is all the attention on you? The attention should be on the people singing. So she's got a friend who does a dance. That's a great friend, right? So all the attention's on them.
Yeah.
Take the attention off me.
You need an attention-seeking friend, though, don't you?
Yeah.
And I don't know if I want to be friends with that person.
So that was last week. This week, it is everything I enjoy is done alone and my weird childhood hobbies.
Okay.
So you can find that at Substack. You can Google my name, Annabelle Port, and it will come up. Bit weird, quite normal, substack.com.
All right. Shall we have another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult?
Let's. So do you know what we've not had for a very long time? And I'm very sure you've missed anything about my weekly visits to Sainsbury's.
No.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
There's been a moratorium on Sainsbury's.
Yeah, but it's because it's been a very non-eventful affair for me for a while now because I've basically figured out how to do it. Go alone without my child. Go at a weird time, like very early or very late or when everyone's at work, so it's empty. And use the Smart Shop app where you can scan the items of food as you go along, put them directly into your bags, then you scan the app at the end, pay and leave. makes it do it. If I do it this way, it's problem free. It's very simple.
Have you been to one of those Amazon Fresh places?
No.
Do you know about them?
No.
So you go in.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to have the app on your phone.
Right.
Then you just walk around and get stuff.
Yeah.
And you leave.
What, you don't even pay?
You're not scanning it. Like the, somehow it just knows what you're picking up and then charges your Amazon account.
Oh my God. I want to go now. Can we go now?
I don't know if it's open. I think maybe this time of night, they don't want drunk people in there.
Oh, God, could you imagine?
I wonder if their systems aren't quite robust enough for the British drunken customer.
The
post-pub crowd.
So these three things, they form basically an unbreakable triangle of success.
Mm.
So it was very far from ideal that I had to break two sides of this perfect triangle by having to go on Saturday at around 10 a.m. with my son.
Ooh.
And then when I arrived, I noticed my app wasn't working. And I asked someone, they said something about the system being down across the store. Now, if it had been the opening to a film, I'd be screaming at my screen, don't do it, just don't do it, just go home, turn around, leave now. But I'm a fool, so I carried on because I did really need some food. And the thing that was most distracting me is this. Have you noticed that now most supermarkets, they put all the prices up and then on random items, they discount them for club members. So with Sainsbury's, you have to have a Nectar card. And without your Nectar card, your shopping is about £20 more.
No, because I haven't been in the supermarket for many years.
You don't go in supermarkets. Oh, it's a thing. They do it in Tesco's. They probably do it everywhere. It's a thing they do now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not because I think I'm better than supermarkets.
No, you don't have one near you and you don't have a car.
Yeah.
And my Nectar card is integrated into my app. And I don't carry one around. I don't know the number of it. So I'm getting stressed out by this. Slightly less about the extra £20 I'll have to pay and more the principle of it. It just annoys me that just because my app's down because of them, I'm going to pay £20 more.
Yes.
I ask someone about it and they say, oh, don't worry, they'll sort it out of the till, which I don't 100% believe, but I carry on. Get my stuff. There are so many people there. The tills are a nightmare. Such long queues. It's like it's the pandemic again. I put it down to being a Saturday morning, but I'm at one queue which barely moves for so long. Honestly, no exaggeration. I'm standing in it for half an hour.
Oh.
And then I try another one, slightly better, but I'm still waiting for 15 minutes with a six-year-old.
Oh.
And I'm getting really anxious about the next bit because I haven't had to do the loading onto the till and the packing the bags things for years. I'm totally out of practice. There's this massive queue behind me.
So you're packing in trolley?
No, this is when I'm using the app. I'm not using the app. The app's down. I'm just doing
But I'm saying when your app is working,
my bags
the reason
are in the
you
trolley.
Don't do that is because you don't need to put the stuff on the conveyor belt.
No, I put it directly into the bags.
Yes.
The bags in the trolley goes into the bags.
Yeah.
So it's so much easier. So
I feel like somebody who has been cryogenically frozen getting to hear what the future is like.
It feels a bit like it's like someone who's never been in the supermarket. It's a bit weird. So so there's a massive queue behind me. It's going all the way up the aisle. People are really fed up. They're tutting. You know, they're sighing. But I load my stuff up behind the little divider, and there's a big niggle in my mind because with all these people waiting, do I mention the Nectar card issue? Because that's going to take up a few more precious seconds. Do I just pay the extra £20 or whatever? I mean, that is what I should do. But I've got this real bee in the bonnet about these supermarket clubs. And I hate it. They did it by stealth. They didn't announce it on the news. They just hoped we wouldn't notice. And I noticed. And I'm figuring that, you know, me asking is not going to add too much time onto the queue. So when it's my turn, I explain the situation about the app and my Nectar card. Mm. And she says, oh, I'll get someone over to help. And I'm wondering now if the system being down is affecting more than just the app, because everybody seems very busy. And I overhear a conversation on the next hill where the customer says, oh, but you'll be glad to finish today. And the worker goes, oh, yeah, it's been a total nightmare today. And I really should say at this point, don't worry about the Nectar card. But for reasons I don't fully understand, I don't back out.
Are they ringing the bell?
No, they don't ring a bell. They still have the bell. Don't think they have the bell anymore. So my checkout operator is looking around a bit for someone, but then they sort of give up and carry on. And
I feel like my perception of a supermarket is frozen at the point when it was Reg Holdsworth and Curly Watts running that one in Coronation Street.
It is. They don't go on the intercom, no. Okay. So she rings it all up. It's all done now. And then I say, because someone doesn't come over and I hate myself for this, she goes, is anyone coming about the Nectar card? And honestly, if I could mind read, I suspect I would now have hearing loss from everyone within earshot screaming inside their mind, shut up about that Nectar card.
She manages to get someone over. She would, like, gestures, calls over. This lady tells me the systems are down across the store. Because the app doesn't work, there's nothing she can do. And I admit defeat, but I'm still a bit of a dick because I say, OK, no worries. I'll talk to head office about refunding the difference. Such a
dick. Head office. talk me through, like, don't. As you're saying that, yeah. How are you imagining your interaction with, how are you getting the number for a head office?
Don't.
Are you going there?
Don't.
Have you got a contact?
I don't know what I'm saying.
Are you trying to imply that you have a direct line of communication to head office?
God. Even my son is embarrassed of me now. All the while, the queue is not moving and it's tailing right back to the back of the store because of me. All eyes are on me as no one's got anything else to do but hate me. Then the checkout operator has a good idea. She says, I'll just give you a new Nectar card and you can scan it and then you'll get your discount. But does she have one on her till? No. Does the person on the till to the left of her have one? No. Does the till on the right to her have one? Yes. Does the person behind me who hates me more than Hitler have to act as a courier for this Nectar card? Yes. The checkout lady scans it. Do you want to know how much money I save with my Nectar card?
Yes, please.
£5. It reduced my bill by £5.
But you are very tight, so I can't imagine you think of £5 as an insignificant amount of money.
At this point, I'd pay £500 for none of this to have happened. I'm almost at the stage of having to move house for fear of seeing these people ever again. But it's over. Just have to pay and leave. I insert my credit card, enter the PIN, PIN correct, declined.
What?
Oh, yes, says the lady. We're having a problem with MasterCard today because of the system failure. I'll try again. And then again.
Oh,
and
no.
It still doesn't work. She asked me if I have another card. I don't, because when I go shopping, I just stick my credit card in my back pocket. I don't take a purse. I've got contactless on my phone, but contactless isn't working because of this system's failure. She tries two more times. Can you imagine the queue now? They are almost 100% discussing where to buy pitchforks and torches and who will lead the angry mob to kill me. She calls the head office lady over again, who tells me, yeah, sorry, most MasterCard payments aren't going through today. Unfortunately, I couldn't stop myself from saying, why don't you just put a sign up then? Which I think is a good point in many ways. This is what happens next. I have to give her my trolley and leave. I've been in there, no joke, I've been in there for 2 hours and I have to leave without any food.
What did head office say?
Yeah, I'm getting the refund.
That's the worst thing that I've ever heard happen to anybody. And I've heard some bad things.
It was bad.
I read that experience column in The Guardian. I mean, I... Wow.
It was bad.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Oh, Chris's email about toilets jogged a memory from last Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Went to see John Kearns at the Royal Court in London.
Oh, lovely.
His show Varnishing Days, which I believe he's now taken to Australia.
Oh.
So if you're in Australia, go and see it. I know Australia's a big place, and getting from one bit to another isn't always easy, but...
I'm sure he's moving around. You might not have to.
Maybe, or maybe he's at that Melbourne Comedy Festival. I don't know. This is speculation. Anyway, it's excellent. It's excellent. I mentioned it because we had an email about it last week, didn't we?
Yes.
The week before.
Yeah.
So, afterwards, I'm waiting, you know, just like going to say hello to John, but I also need to go to the toilet. And as I'm approaching the toilets, they're all gender neutral. Okay, so anybody can go in any toilet, but there is a sign letting you know that one of the toilets is urinals.
Okay.
And then the other one is stalls. So probably it used to be the gents and the ladies.
Okay.
And I'm heading for the urinals because it feels simplest. Mm. And then I see Greg James from Radio 1 going towards the urinals. And I've met him a couple of times, but I don't know if he'd remember me. And then, like, if he doesn't remember me, I'll feel bad about myself. But then it's going to be all, like, awkward about sort of saying, oh, it's Jeff, we've met a couple of... So I decide to go in what used to be the ladies and go in a cubicle instead. And I think a lot of people complain about this this setup. But for me, this is working really well.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to show how on board I am with the modern world of toilets.
Great.
As opposed to the modern world of supermarkets.
Yes.
What else? I was doing a recording of a podcast in a studio last week with a proper engineer. So I'm making good small talk with him.
Oh, yeah.
By which I don't know if it's good or not, because something bad happens. So this guy works in the studio, but most of what he does is record live music. And I'm saying, oh, so who have you done recently? And then he starts naming bands that I haven't heard of.
Oh, right.
Because I'm old.
Yeah.
And in the same way that now I'll look at the Glastonbury lineup or I'll look at the Brits and not know most of it.
Oh, no, terrible, isn't it?
The same thing is happening to me as this young man is describing bands that he's done the sound engineering for. But I think, you know, if somebody knows I've worked in music radio, they expect, yeah, they'd be disappointed to think that I'm no longer au courant. Mm. So what I'm trying to do is just sort of nod enthusiastically and go, or convey some kind of judgment of the band, despite the fact that I know nothing about them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's listing these bands, this one, this one, this one. He says, and then I did Persian New Year at the BBC Radio Theatre. And I went, oh, yeah, they're good, right? And he said, no, it was the actual Persian New Year. It was like the celebration of Persian New Year. I thought, how could I have known? Like, I didn't think we said Persian anymore.
No, I've never heard that expression before.
I think, like,
or that band.
I think if you're Persian, you can use that word.
Yeah.
But I thought that was gone now.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
His fault.
Yeah. Mm. So there was that. Now, you've sent me some clippings.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what we got here. I'm just going to drag my computer slightly closer to me. I'm going to click on my email from Annabelle. And the first one I'm going to click on is this. This is from The Guardian today, in fact. And mushrooms have been banned from many of the menus on National Trust properties.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised by this because it's to do with sustainability. So mushrooms are often grown in peat. Peat are used for carbon capture, and growing mushrooms in that peat means that you end up releasing carbon into the atmosphere.
Right, I didn't know. I have no idea about
this. I didn't either.
It's news to
me. But I also think there's something a bit performative about it because they haven't banned meat.
Yes.
Which, from a carbon perspective, you know, Let's divorce all morality from from a carbon perspective, is more harmful.
Yeah,
even if it's done in the sort of best possible way, from what I understand. But don't come at me, because I know people don't like hearing vegetarians talk.
Yep.
In much the same way as I don't like hearing you as a vegan,
you know,
tell me that. Tell me that cheese doesn't involve like a happy cow and a milking stool. That's how I like to think of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was surprised to read this because I really love mushrooms. And, you know, sometimes I can be a bit judgmental about some of the things that people, you know, won't put themselves out for when it comes to the environment.
Mm.
But now I'm reading this and thinking, well, I'm not stopping eating mushrooms.
Oh!
I just don't think they're the problem. They're not a big part of the problem.
Do you feel they're doing it for PR? Like, it feels like we, the National Trust, would be doing PR stuff.
But then, like, these things often are, you know, like they'll say, we're going to stop making the Twix. We're going to stop making it.
And
then there's a petition to save the Twix, and it was all a PR stunt.
Mm-mm.
I can't imagine the National Trust. Because what this isn't doing is making me think, I'll go visit some of those National Trust properties now that I know they're not condoning the mushroom industry.
Yeah, yeah. It's backfiring if that's what they're doing.
Unless it is like that. And I don't think Twix have ever done it, by the way. Mm. But if it is like that Twix thing, and this is maybe like a secret plot by the Mushroom Marketing Board to make us fall in love with mushrooms all over again.
Yeah, yeah, because we're so scared they're going to be taken away that we're just like, well, maybe they think we're going to stockpile them or something.
Because they've been quiet for a while.
Haven't they?
Mushroom Marketing Board.
Since?
I'd say, well, when was the Make Room for the Mushrooms ad campaign?
Oh,
80s? Yeah, mid-80s. Mm. They've been biding the time, waiting for the moment.
Here it is. And quick, call the National Trust. I've got an idea.
I always find it so odd that there were just adverts for mushrooms.
Mm.
Like, it'd be like there being an advert for an apple.
Yeah, well, they were. There's mushrooms, milk and eggs.
Yes.
They were the three things?
Yeah. I think it's probably some kind of conglomerate. But do you know what I mean? Of growers, mushroom growers getting together and buying a TV ad.
Right.
But it's weird. It really feels odd
to
see an advert for a vegetable. Mm. Not like a brand of vegetable, not it's this, we're the farm, we're Bird's Eye, whatever it is. It's just
for vegetable.
Eat mushrooms.
Yeah, yeah. Something really lovely about it.
It is nice, isn't it? Okay, what else have you sent me? Oh, you sent me a thing about fridge magnets. Should we talk about that?
Okay.
So, again, this was from the Guardian, and this is a study by Liverpool University talking about how fridge magnets can be helpful to holiday memory recall. And, look, I'm sure that this study has a lot of value, but isn't that the point of a fridge magnet?
Yeah, isn't that why you buy it, to remind you of your holidays?
Yeah. But maybe they were hoping that the evidence would show that people see a fridge magnet of Blackpool Tower and think, what's that? I haven't been to Paris. Like, maybe they were hoping to debunk the whole, blow the gaff. Is that an expression, blow the gaff?
I think so.
Yeah.
And then it would kind of like, people would stop buying them because they're like, oh, they don't remind you of holidays. Yeah, I'm not going to buy them anymore.
But it turns out they do. Here's what I would like from a fridge magnet. Mm. I would like to know that it can hold up a piece of A4 paper or maybe two.
Yeah.
Because I feel that most of the time there's no way of telling until you get home whether that magnet is powerful enough to hold up papers.
And it's got to have another purpose. It can't just be on the fridge. It's got to be, you know, holding up some piece of paper.
Yeah, exactly. And then I got to thinking... Mm. Like maybe there's a short-lived feature you can do, which is like Mug Chat, but it's Mag Chat, where people share favourite fridge magnets.
I'm sorry, you've already lost me. I think my problem is that I can't use, and it's, I feel left out because I can't use fridge magnets.
What?
Because I've got I've got an integrated fridge, so it's got like a door on it.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it's sad for me.
Yeah, it's sad that.
Yeah. So whenever I get a magnet, I have to put it in a weird place, like on the side of like the fireplace. That's the only like metal bit. Anyway, that's boring. Chat is already boring.
No, I think that's good Mag Chat.
No, like, that was
boring. Are people using the magnets somewhere other than the fridge?
I bored myself.
That's good.
Side of the microwave, that's the other place.
Joe, our fridge is covered in fridge magnets. Mm. I don't think I could name one of them.
I couldn't know. I mean, and I don't live here. Like, that's
weird. There's a lot of them. Like, we go places and Jean wants to go in the tat shop at the end, you know, the gift shop.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, well, it's cheap. Get fridge magnet. Yeah. So we've got a lot of these things. Mm. And I've got no recollection of what any of them look like or where they came from.
Mm.
That's quite something. Mm. It's not like I'm not going in that fridge.
I'm not getting excited about Magnet Chat, sorry.
It's good, Annabelle. All right. Well, we'll leave that there then.
Sorry.
But I'm going to throw that open because, you know,
a lot of people
didn't like Mug Chat.
Yeah, yeah.
And we happened to like it.
Okay.
So we were advocates, but it enraged a lot of people.
And I'm very open-minded. Like, if other people are enjoying it, I'm not going to say a word.
You're not going to yuck their yum?
No.
So let's see.
Okay, fair enough.
Mag Chat.
Mag Chat. Is that jingles.
Get jingles made.
Or we can just change the old ones. Mag. No real ones, okay.
I don't know.
Sorry.
I don't know. Hello at adriftpodcast.com. Quandary Corner at the GLAP Clinic here in Problematic.
Just having a sip of my tea.
That must be cold by now.
Yeah, but I'm more than used to that, so that's fine.
Okay, first quandary. I'm speaking slowly while I find it. Is from LL.
Cool J.
No, not that one. I was recently on a flight from New York to Miami, travelling in business slash first. I know, but as my friend's accountant once told her, if you don't travel business class, your children will. Across the aisle.
And what's that?
If you don't travel business class, your children will. I think it means your kids will inherit your money and just spend it on it anyway.
My parents.
I think it's not all families.
Right.
No.
I don't want to get into my feelings about not being able to fly business class.
No, don't get into it.
I just think it's disgusting because of the environment.
Right. What, flying?
Business class.
Yeah. Why is business class especially? Can't get as many seats in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, you hadn't even thought of that.
No, that's why. I do happen to know that. Okay. No, the real reason is I can't afford it anymore.
Yeah.
And it just, I especially hate it when they make you go through business class.
Evil.
To get to your rubbish premium economy or economy seat.
Look at you with your premium economy.
Premium economy is BS.
Right.
I don't use language like that often on this podcast.
No, I'm a little bit shocked.
Yeah, but yeah. It's slightly bigger chairs and like, you know, the reason people want to fly in that front part of the plane isn't because, I mean, there are some people who just want to feel like they're it. Mm. Those are terrible people. Mm. It's just being comfortable. Imagine being on a long haul flight and being comfortable. Mm. That's the only thing, right? Mm-mm. And then I feel like, you know, the song Sit Down by James.
Yeah.
And it says, if I hadn't seen such riches, I could live with being poor.
Oh, you've seen
that's
the
what
riches.
That's what it's like now. Yeah. So I just sit and glower. In a way, I'd rather just not go anywhere.
Oh, Jeff, stop it.
But anyway, it's disgusting business class travel.
I think this is very much going to affect your opinion of Ella's problem because you're getting slightly annoyed that she's gone from New York to Miami. How long does that flight take?
Not far.
Okay.
It's not long, is it? So 3-4 hours. I don't know. Maybe not 4, maybe 3.
She's in business slash first. Anyway, let's move on. Across the aisle and one down from me was a family occupying all 4 seats. Mum with one small child behind me and dad with a 7-ish year old boy next to him. The toddler directly behind me was firmly secured in his seatbelt for landing by the mum. But the little boy behind me was sitting cross-legged in his seat and I definitely saw that he was not strapped in and the dad was on his phone paying no attention at all. We were already way into descent and I didn't know what to do. It was too late to call over the flight attendant and I knew I needed to say something. But I was so busy rehearsing my words for how not to offend while potentially saving this child's life that I ran out of time. We landed smoothly and yes, I really did wish there had been a bump or two so the boy would slide out of his seat, unharmed of course, and shame the neglectful dad. I fantasised that the mum/wife would see that the dad needed a good talking to about paying attention to the safety of his child, thus avoiding all sorts of future possible near drownings, third-degree burns, broken bones and the like. I think I was intimidated by the fact that since this was business class, the dad was probably really successful and doing billion-dollar deals on his phone. Pathetic, isn't it? And sexist. Who knows? The appropriately safety-conscious mum could have been the billions earner and the dad was just a terrible dad watching YouTube.
Or it could be that their parents had never flown business class and they just like inherited money for nothing.
Yeah, true. In any case, what would have been the least offensive thing to say here that wouldn't have resulted in a mind your own business?
Oh, God, this is a horrible one.
Who would say mind your own business about their kid like being strapped in for safety? That is weird.
Yes.
But then
yes.
How do you say it without making them look bad about them, like feel bad about themselves?
So there's two things going on. I think it's impossible to say it without seeming like a busybody.
Especially when they're behind you. They're thinking like, why is she turning around noticing that?
It's lax of the cabin crew as well, I think.
Very.
Really?
It's their job.
Yeah. But anybody should be able to take that note, as it were.
Yeah.
Any parent should be able to take that note.
Okay.
But it's impossible to give the note. I don't think it's possible to give the note.
One of the options is saying, if there's someone with you, loudly, have you got your seatbelt on? Make sure your seatbelt on, because it sometimes gets quite bumpy going into Miami. Do you want to slip out your seat and smash your face open?
Yeah, you could do like a nice like sort of little voice like, yeah. Can they hear you? Can you get your head close to their head? Are they in the next row?
No, they're behind.
Row behind? Yeah. So you can turn around and go, oh, excuse me, I noticed he hasn't got his seatbelt in, and I've come a cropper coming into Miami a few times. It's really bumpy.
That sounds quite nice.
Yeah.
Who could take offence at that? I mean, I feel terrible, but I wouldn't take offence.
Yeah. I think you've just got to be the hero, and the cost of that is that maybe you're going to be reviled for being a busybody. But could you live with yourself otherwise?
And it's not,
I mean,
like,
you clearly have, so it's but you are writing into a podcast. So.
It's not like taking off, you've got to spend the next 4 hours at them. At least it's landing and you're not going to see them again.
Yeah. And you're in front of them, so you can really speed off the plane and lose them through security.
Oh, it's a tough one.
It is a tough one, isn't
it? Given you two options, though.
Yeah.
Should it happen again? Might not ever happen again.
You should be able, I'm just trying to think. It's very difficult to know without being able to see the aircraft in question. But I do feel like you should be able to do some wild gesturing at the cabin crew. But they will see you doing the wild gesturing.
They'd hear you go, that kid's not got his seatbelt on.
Yeah. You should be able to, those phones they sometimes have on planes.
Mm.
Can you dial other seats? You should be able to dial the cabin crew.
Whisper into it. Look.
I don't know.
I don't want you to be alarmed, but... Yeah.
I'd be reporting that cabin crew to the Civil Aviation Authority.
They weren't doing their job properly.
They really weren't.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I think that's sorted. Happy?
No, I'm really sad about letting or embarrassed about letting all my bitterness about not getting to fly business class anymore.
Is it too distracting? Let's move on.
Okay. It really, really is. It's become so symbolic. Like, so firstly, most flights I've taken in my life haven't been business class.
Yes.
And I don't think you need to fly business class. It's just sometimes things can become symbolic of a wider decline.
Yes.
And I feel that is what it is to me.
Okay.
But I know that I sound spoiled. I do know that. But imagine being Sarah on a long-haul flight with me when I'm glowering in the middle seat.
Sure, that's fun.
Clutching my blanket, like really angrily clutching my blanket.
What are you angry at?
Life.
Life.
Circumstances of life.
Life.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
It's hard.
I don't feel entitled. No. Maybe I do. Maybe that's the problem. Mm. Let it go. Be water.
Be happy you had it.
Is it better to have loved being in a business class and lost, or to have never loved being in a business class at all? I don't know.
Okay. Well, my instinct feels that we need to steer this on to the next one now.
Okay.
Okay. And it's Craig.
Craig, you say?
Yeah. This is on the ground, so you won't have to get upset. Or maybe you will. It involves a nice restaurant.
I know. I go to nice restaurants.
Oh, good. I recently went to
California. And I'm over the really expensive ones.
Yeah. Okay. I recently went to California for work. And one of the days, we had a big company dinner at a nice restaurant.
Mm.
I'm vegan and had checked in advance that there was enough for me to eat on the menu. And despite the slim pickings of only one dish on the menu, I could see I wouldn't go hungry. So didn't need to bother our group organizer with my dietary requirements. I would simply order from the menu like everyone else. After being seated in the restaurant, it quickly became apparent that we had in fact pre-ordered a set menu, which was brought to the table on big sharer platters for people to take what they wanted. Not one of the items was vegetarian, let alone vegan. I had to sit there while huge plates of shrimp, chicken and beef were put down in front of me and gobbled up by my colleagues. I got the attention of the waitress and asked if I could have the hummus starter that I knew was available on the menu. She informed me that it wasn't included and went to speak to my group organiser to check it was okay to put through on our tab. Unnecessarily awkward, as I knew it wouldn't be a problem. I also asked the waitress when the main course was coming out and if there would be a vegan option, and she said they could offer me the vegan ravioli, which would come out in due course. Fast forward about 15 minutes, during which I was getting so hungry, I was considering whether consuming my own flesh would affect my vegan status. And my hummus arrives, placed down on the table by the waitress, but not directly in front of me. The person next to me proceeds to pick at it and starts passing it down the table for everyone to try, thinking it was just another appetizer that was brought for the group.
Oh, no.
I managed to muster a weak, sorry, would you mind passing that back? It was brought for me because I can't eat any other food. But not before several people had had a good go at it. Worse still, two of the people it had been passed down to were vegetarian, so had also missed out on the appetizers. And it now looked like I was snatching the feedback for myself and depriving the others. Not wanting anyone to go hungry, I spoke to the waitress and ordered two more plates of hummus for the others, and I ended up with a half-eaten one while they got a fresh plate each. Absolutely mortifying for all involved, including the person who stole my food from me. Although I could tell by his response that he definitely wasn't a drifter. He was sorry, but not in the way you or I would be, waking up in the night in cold sweats with the embarrassment. It seemed like water off a duck's back to him. After the hummus debacle, I was waiting a long time while yet more big plates of meat were brought to the table, and the waitress eventually brought me a very small bowl of plain jasmine rice with no explanation. I was pretty hungry, so started to eat it, but even with my extreme hunger, I couldn't bring myself to eat a whole bowl of plain rice. I was contemplating whether to ask the waitress if the ravioli was coming, as I was beginning to have my doubts, but it did eventually arrive about 10 minutes later. Again, it was a big sharing bowl and felt I couldn't take a particularly large portion as there wouldn't be any left for anyone else. I made sure I was first in, but despite knowing I had had very little to eat, everyone else then dug in and finished it off. Please tell me, what was the right thing to do in this situation?
Here's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Get in early. So I think as soon as you're seated,
yeah,
you need to identify who the person is who's going to be waiting on your table,
yeah,
and flag this vegetarian vegan issue.
Also, flag it up with everyone else. Is anyone else here vegetarian or vegan?
Yeah, yeah.
Shall we? Yeah. And, yeah. And then everyone else hears.
Yeah.
And so we'll get the hummus. Don't touch the hummus.
Yeah.
But you know what? Even doing that, some people still touch the hummus because they'll just see it as a sharing thing, and they won't see they've had all the meat. I've been through this many a time.
No, you should put your arm around it. You know, like kids do when they're trying to hide the homework from somebody they don't like.
Yeah.
You should do that with it.
Oh, I've got a good idea. Mm-hmm. You sort of put it on your lap and then turn your back to the table.
So yeah.
You're facing away from the table with it on your lap.
I'm imagining some kind of contraption that is like a tray, but it's on a strap around your neck, almost like an usher.
Yeah.
Like the things that they have for selling the ice cream in.
Yes.
And you just have your food put into that.
And you can go and stand in the corner and eat it.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Or build some kind of makeshift barricade from table decorations, bread rolls. Around, you need like a, you need your area demarked.
And if anyone reaches towards it, growl.
But it does. It's very undriftery because you have to speak to a group and announce that you need to be treated differently in some way.
Who was this organizer not checking any dietary requirements? Can I just suddenly place all the blame on them?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, this is a situation that shouldn't happen.
No, I also. Yeah, don't like the sound of this venue. They don't sound like they're very on top of it either.
No.
But what about lanyards for people with dietary requirements?
No, please don't let me. Because imagine how complicated some of them are going to be. Like, imagine Tom's, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And mine, to be honest.
Yours aren't. So you're just a vegan, but then... No.
But okay, I eat eggs, like... Sometimes I have a bit of chocolate.
But if there's a vegan option, you would just eat the vegan option,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, that's
and
true.
And then you lapse a little bit from time to time. But you're like a 98% vegan? 95?
Let's say 80.
No, you're way above 80.
Really?
I'd say like I could be 70 somewhere.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, you know, you're better than that. So, but the point is, you're not like me. So I'm vegetarian, but I've got my weird thing where eggs make me vomit.
Right.
Unless they're like baked in a cake and then they don't bother me at all.
Well, that would be on your lanyard.
Yeah,
this is the problem.
Yeah. Whereas like a vegan lanyard, I think there should be a lanyard system, but you can't go any more complicated than the different types of meal you can request on a plane.
Okay.
You know, so kosher.
Yeah, okay.
Hindu vegetarian.
Could you be gluten-free vegetarian?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Right.
Especially in first class or business. Oh, food choices.
Oh, really?
You're so comfortable.
Oh, my God, he's off again.
Proper cutlery.
Oh, no.
Got a like, nice little salt and pepper pot. You're not having to involve yourself with a sachet.
Well, I think we've solved that problem. Let's move on.
And that was our podcast. Thank you for listening to it. We appreciate your ears, don't we?
Massively.
Love them. What great ears you have.
Lovely.
All shapes and sizes.
Love them all.
Yeah. Odd number, even number, whatever's going on with you and your ears, we are into it and we are grateful. Thank you very much. We'd like your stories, please, of social ineptitude. And we'd like your quandaries for Quandary Corner and your podcations. The email address is hello@adriftpodcast.com. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the back of music and to Emily Harrison. How could we forget Emily Harrison?
Mm. Like, what did she do again? Incidental music.
Yeah. Emily Harrison is one of these people who pops up on my social media with some regularity.
Oh, so nice.
I feel like she's, as well as saying her name every week, she's very present in my life.
Lovely.
Even though we don't do much interacting. Mm. We're not blanking each other.
No.
Just sure. Got different things going on. Mm. So, yeah, thanks to Man in the Echo for the... I said him already, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're on tour. Let's go see them. But it would involve leaving the house. Mm. Carla Gowlett took the photos. Kim Rainey designed our artwork. And, what? But you said the King's Head. You better have a pint waiting for me. And it better be milk.
You need work on that.
Podication time, double podication time.
Whoa.
What goes on that we get to this point where we're saying, well, maybe that's it for podications. We had a good 20-year run or whatever it's been, but they seem to have completely petered out, no more are petering in, and I don't think we'll ever do them again. And then all of a sudden we got two in 1 week.
Honestly, the podication diary is rammed.
What happens? So this comes from Eileen Fergus, who says... Hello, Jeff and Annabelle.
Hello.
I would like to request a podication for dedicated podcast listener, longtime friend of the show, Laura.
Aww.
The best of them all. It's her birthday on Wednesday the 21st.
Of February this is. We're very behind.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
We're so behind. Even Laura Fergus
I know.
Is getting a podcation a month late.
It's ridiculous.
She was just sweet 16 when we all came to visit the show at the old place. Laura joined you both with Nelson on the late night show whilst her dad and I waited upstairs. That was the first of her many visits. So always loved Laura coming to visit.
It was lovely.
We go back further than that. I remember her ringing into Jeff and Pete's evening show, contributing to an on-air tombola. She was probably about 10 on that occasion.
Oh, wow.
I introduced her to good music. And to you, we often exchange things that we've heard and make comparisons to our predicaments. So thanks for sticking with us.
Isn't it nice?
You know, I could talk about my own decline. I mean, the Eileen's lived through it, Laura.
they're still here.
Please say happy birthday to Laura. We're sorry that we are not with you on your birthday. I hope that this isn't the only apology.
Oh, I'm sure there was a phone call because it's very late otherwise.
Like a month.
Why have I not heard from my mum?
And then,
weird.
I'm late with this podcation request, so it may be too late for her birthday. It is, but we'll take another week. Well, there you go. Here we are. Birthday wishes from me and her longtime friends will be special.
I hope so.
I'm sure. Eileen, thank you. And Laura. I don't know what's going on with Laura. Like, it's been a while, hasn't it? You were in contact with her. Every now and again.
She's great.
I really like a Laura visit, but it's just weird now we're doing a podcast in my house.
Yeah.
It feels like slightly inappropriate saying to Laura, do you want to come to my house?
Right, 10 o'clock at night.
And sit with us in a loft. This is from Ellie Brammer, who says, hi, Jeff and Annabelle.
Hi.
Please could I request a podication for my daughter, Moss? I like that.
Isn't it nice?
I really like that.
Yeah.
As close to the 21st of March as possible. Oh, this is close. It's within touching distance, isn't it? As this day marks her 16th birthday, we had a podication for her on her first birthday and thought it only fitting to have one for her 16th.
Mm.
Wow, Moss.
16 years ago.
God.
Oof.
Just taking that in, are you?
Mm.
Moss is currently studying for her GCSEs and is working really, really hard. And we thought this would be a nice way to tell her how proud we are of her. She's grown into an incredible young person. She's smart, kind and funny, and we couldn't ask for anything more. Felt myself going then, but I think it's cumulative. It's like thinking about Laura and Eileen and time, but also Moss, you know, like hearing Moss described like that by a mum. Oh, life. It's nice, isn't it? This is what I need to learn to appreciate.
Yes.
And I do. But how can I bring it with me onto a long-haul flight? She's also a drifter and listens to the podcast every week too. That's so lovely,
that's
Moss.
Very nice.
Out of your own volition.
Incredible to me.
There's got to be a story there that we don't know. So we just want to say, Moss, have a wonderful 16th birthday. We love you so much and look forward to pizza later. Lots of love. Imperial Princess Ellie, Mum, Matt, Dad, and Abe, little brother. There we go. You nearly had pizza on your birthday, didn't you? And then did the old switcheroo at the last minute.
No, I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Well, I love that. That's left me with a lovely warm glow there at the end. And if you would like a podication, you can email us. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.